This is the Worth Report.
Despite multiple eyewitness accounts saying Keith Lamont Scott was unarmed when he was shot and killed on September 20th, the investigation revealed he did in fact have a gun on him and his DNA was found on its grip. Authorities say it was a Colt 380 semi-automatic that had one live round in the chamber. The safety was off and it was cocked.
Every officer present reporting seeing Mr. Scott holding a gun. Officers can be heard on video repeatedly commanding Mr. Scott to drop the gun. The idea that Mr. Scott was unarmed does not explain why officers acted defensively, had their guns drawn, and ordered him to drop the gun. Everyone who has seen the video of the incident can feel the tension in that situation.
Now, here are your hosts, Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright.
Good Saturday, and welcome to the Worth Report. I'm your host, Nick Wharton, here at my good friend and colleague, Glenn Wright, founder and president of Worth Financial. Each week, we'll bring you news that you can immediately use to manage your financial planning and offer commentary on local, national, and global events that will affect your ability to sustain your financial future. Glenn, how are you doing on this Saturday?
Doing great. I'm actually in Atlanta today, of all places.
Very good. How's the weather there?
Oh, it's nice. You know, when I originally got here a few days ago, we had tornadoes just like in Charlotte. They actually touched down here, but luckily I think no one was injured, and you know, I made it safely, so all is well. But well, it's nice now.
Well, that's good to hear. We had a storm of sorts last night as well. We just learned that the district attorney has sought to not press charges against the officer involved in the shooting of Keith Lamont Smith.
Speaking of storms.
Yeah, speaking of storms is right. That is really interesting development. And I understand that four people were arrested and what appeared to be a fairly peaceful protest. And all kinds of other information came out as well. The DA shared. There appeared to be a gun was present. They did. And so there's essentially no grounds. At least that's what's being said at this point for pressing charges against the officer.
Wow. Have you heard anything from the Urban League or in the community?
Well, you
so
know,
far?
I appreciate you asking that. I know that the attorney's position has been, while there appears to be no criminal charges being brought against the officer, there are reasons to explore a civil case. And so that's developing. I think from, you know, certainly as an Urban League, you know, our concerns in many ways are about the climate. Number one, we want people to be safe and peacefully protest, as is their right. But I think the bigger climate that we're constantly reviewing and just being very conscious of is the state of affairs regarding economic mobility and the sort of overall climate of mistrust of law enforcement, as well as, you know, the overall climate, quite frankly, around economic development. And how do we get people moving and working and communities feeling like they're included in this prosperous city we call home, the Queen City of Charlotte. So that's the larger backdrop that we're conscious of. So we'll have to continue to monitor that. I belong to a task force, CMPD task force, and we're engaged in conversations, making sure that community policing is done appropriately. So this is a moving target. There'll still be more investigation, more conversation. I'm certain that will continue to develop.
How many people are part of that task force?
Well, we've got essentially, I'd say 15 to 20 individuals on our task force. And we spent a year long, actually over half a year, I'll say, reviewing a whole range of elements from recruitment and training to internal affairs to professional development. And we learned a great many things. In fact, maybe another show we can have Chief Putney on, and he can literally talk about the relationship between CMPD and economic development and how it's important to have effective community policing, a positive relationship between the local police force and communities in general and diverse communities in particular.
That sounds like a plan.
During the campaign, both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump used Wall Street as a bit of a punching bag. But as we mentioned, President-elect Trump has now chosen a banker for Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. Joined CNBC this morning in an interview and talked about the way that banks are regulated under a law called Dodd-Frank. Candidate Trump said he wanted to dismantle those regulations. And here's what Mnuchin had to say today.
If we look at Dodd-Frank, the number one problem with Dodd-Frank is it's way too complicated and it cuts back lending. So we want to strip back parts of Dodd-Frank that prevent banks right. from lending. And that'll be the number one priority on the regulatory side.
So this week we've got a lot of developments on the national scene. We are in what is the sort of President-elect Trump vortex. And we're learning how he's planning to lead with some recent appointments. I know it's he's been having a number of notables visit the White House, and they've been shaking hands right out. Is it the White House? Well, I think it's the Trump Tower. It's amazing. They come in, they're shaking hands, they're waving the cameras. It's a veritable sort of merry-go-round of individuals. And yeah. We'll see who gets the job. It's like almost like Apprentice. I've even seen Mitt Romney, who essentially just roasted him during the campaign. He's now up for Secretary of State, and I think that that's just amazing to me.
I agree.
Yeah. So, and I think the story that's getting a lot of attention is his Secretary of Treasury pick. What do you think about that guy?
It's interesting. You know, it's interesting. It seems like, for some reason, who's really running the country? Goldman Sachs, you know, every president, like the last few at least, have had someone from Goldman Sachs to run the Treasury, as if, you know, that's a part of the qualifying process, is that you have to have someone from the country of Goldman Sachs. So it seems like we certainly have another one. Who knows? I mean, who knows? Everyone is so nervous about who he's going to pick. And this is on both sides of the aisle. Is he more of a moderate, a true Democrat that just wears the Republican suit, or is he going to be very conservative? And he's backtracked some of the things he's already said during the campaign. So it's curious. Steve Mnuchin did pretty well. He took advantage of opportunities during the financial crisis.
I'm fascinated. What? You mentioned he took advantage of the financial crisis. He did more than that. I mean, let's talk about that a little bit. He was one of the gentlemen who literally, you know, purchased a firm, and my goodness, how, it was 35,000 foreclosures he orchestrated. Is that accurate? Something
yeah,
like that?
It is. It is. Yep.
So it's sort of strange when you think about the campaign. I know that President-elect Trump really went in on Hillary Clinton's ties to Wall Street, and he's quite effective, actually, and certainly with her speeches to Wall Street firms that we never got a transcript on. It left a great deal of mystery about the kinds of deals and conversations, promises she may have made to these individuals. But yet, we look at his picks so far, and he seems to have picked millionaires and billionaires to within his inner circle, and some, quite frankly, who were orchestrators of the disaster we found ourselves in not so long ago. I'm not certain how that works out, but they've given him an incredible grace period to move in the way he's moving. But wow, that's a big one. What do you think?
Well, Mnuchin bought Indy Mac. He bought Indy Mac Bank, and definitely, you know, he profited, took advantage of the situation. But just like many people did, I mean, there are many people who, if you were able to still have money during the crisis,
right?
And what I've said previously, where there's crisis, there's always opportunity.
Absolutely.
So he's the one who's able to seize it. One of the issues is when you read different commentary, like I read the Wall Street Journal article and a couple other articles about him, they're making that as if he is a bad person because he took advantage of the system, took advantage of the opportunity, where, you know, it is my belief that that is not the case. by being in this case, a smart businessman. He wasn't the one who brought the downfall of the attack. That happened on its own, but he was there to be able to seize the opportunity and, you know, and make money in the process.
Well, I appreciate that perspective, and I think that sometimes we simplify things to whether people are sort of good and bad, and I think the media has frames it in a very quick soundbite kind of way. However, what's interesting about this pick, and you're right, we shouldn't disparage people for being in the right place, right time, and capitalizing on the yin and yang, I'll say, of the economy, right? The dilemma here is not even a problem, it's a dilemma, is that he is the gentleman who's being selected to actually correct the problem. And that's a bit difficult. So when I hear those on the other side of the aisle critique this guy, it takes a bit explaining here. You know, I think that, that's one side of it. The other side is, I remember when Trump talked about not paying taxes and this sort of thing, he said, well, I'm a smart guy. You know, I'm taking advantage of the system. So he's obviously selecting individuals who've taken advantage of the system. The challenge is that what is the incentive for them to change the system that they've profited by, as well as others in their circles? Why would they disadvantage those that have done the same thing, you know, they've done to become wealthy? And so other than, I mean, it's not like logical. And I suppose the idea is that the working class guy, the guy at the bottom, will benefit from these, you know, policies that help the rich. I just don't see how, I don't get the logic of it, but obviously many people voted for him. And so that's an idea that has some shelf life.
Well, it's clear on both sides that the rhetoric is on other issues.
Sure.
To get people to vote outside their economic interests.
Ah, now we're talking. Okay, so that's pretty heavy stuff.
So that's clear.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly there have been many people who have. I mean, he hasn't, and so far, I mean, no one's been confirmed yet. But with everyone he's meeting tend to be more of the elite. Although, like someone like Mnuchin, who's never really had any experience running, really any government experience or running a large corporation, but he's been able to take advantage and make, you know, and make some deals happen.
Sure.
Just like Donald Trump. So the key is, does that translate over to government, which government it's not about being the most profitable. It's about serving the people. So is that going to continue to happen, or is it going to profit only a few? And that's the issue. Just like we discussed a couple of weeks ago on the show, that there is the upper middle class, even under the new tax code, there's a possibility that they could actually end up paying more money in taxes than what they're currently paying, while people on the higher end of the tax code are going to pay, or what's considered the mass affluent, would pay less money.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so just to kind of go a little bit in on his Treasury pick, Mnuchin, it's also become apparent that he has supported Democratic candidates. Chuck Schumer, I understand he's donated and raised money for him. He also supported President Obama in his first presidential campaign and raised money also for Kamala Harris, Democratic who won the California Senate seat in last month's election. So it's not entirely clear where he'll come down on how to get this economy flowing, because he obviously balances his contributions and his engagement on both sides of the aisle. So that says something perhaps about him being balanced. But boy, this is all going to be very, very interesting.
Well, the other piece of this is, what can he do? I mean, he's truly an outsider, hasn't had any experience with this. Is he going to be able to translate what he's done in the private sector to ultimately grow the economy? Because the goal, based on what Donald Trump wants to achieve, he wants GDP to grow to 3%, 4%, and 5%, which we haven't had in a long time.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
Mm-hmm. That's how it's going to be sustainable. Can he do that? And some of these policies, I mean, his position is paramount for that to happen. It's crucial. So can he do that? That's going to be the key. Secretary of State, some of these other ones, you know, every decision he makes has a financial ramification for trade and so forth. But this one is going to be is one of the most important ones, in my opinion.
Yeah,
maybe I'm a numbers guy, so hey.
Well,
there it is.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Well,
yeah.
You know, if it means anything, he will join a long line of Goldman Sachs guys that have worked in the in presidential administrations, including President Obama's and a number of Ivy Leaguers. So he won't be alone, and this is not an unusual pick for President-elect Trump. Now, the thing that I've always found really interesting in this recent economic downturn, as well as the previous ones, that those individuals who are at the head of these companies, many of which have been Ivy League trained, really bright guys and gals, I'll say. However, that has not translated oftentimes into their ethical standards in terms of how they've the dilemma between their practice and how it's impacted individuals. I'm not suggesting they're all bad people, but there are bad things that are happening to people as a result of their decisions. And in some cases, and in many cases, there are individuals who actually practiced amazingly unethical behavior as leaders of many of the top companies. And certainly they've not gone to jail or even been held accountable or even been held accountable, quite frankly. Not to disparage these candidates, but I'm just saying.
I'm with you. It's going to be interesting to see. Hopefully, if we can get GDP to grow and be sustainable at that amount, then wow, then that's going to be fantastic. But we will see. We will see, and we will see pretty soon.
That's true.
They're looking to just to let you know. I spoke with some people on the on our accounting team, and people are saying in the CPA world, you know, focus on deductions, which we need to. I'm going to talk a little more in detail about this in the next week or so, but focusing on tax deductions now, because there's a good chance you're going to pay a higher tax rate for most people and lower tax rates next year.
Okay.
So if you have deductions you can take, then this is the time to actually do that versus next year when it should be more tax friendly.
Say more about that.
Yeah, because you're actually, the premise is you'll be in a higher tax, you'll be in a higher tax bracket now. So let's say you're a small business owner and you're looking to expand your business. You may want to actually spend some of the money now and get the tax benefit now, because you'll save more in tax than by waiting next year.
Hmm.
So if you have $100 and if you, let's say you're in the 30% tax bracket, marginal tax bracket, so if you don't spend the 100, you pay tax next year, now you have 70, right? But the same 100 next year, you might be in the 20% tax bracket or 18% tax bracket. So it makes sense to spend it now versus waiting to January or February, because you get a bigger bang for your buck by doing that.
Okay. That's important news you can use.
Absolutely. And then next year, depending on what the tax code, the final tax code turns to be, then even putting money in your 401k, you may not want to put as much. You may want to actually save money outside your 401k as well, instead of putting it all. You always want to put up to the amount of match, because that's just a great return automatically, getting the employer match portion of your contribution. But anything above that, you may want to wait, depending on what this tax code turns out to be, because it is thought if it drops dramatically the way that President-elect Trump would like it to, then many economists feel it's not going to be sustainable and it's not going to stay that way. So then you take more money home now at a lower income tax rate, pay the tax on it in a lower bracket, because later on the tax rates will go up again, and that's when you'll start saving more money in your retirement.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, from a cash flow perspective. Oh, so
that's really important.
Everything could be totally different. Who knows? We will see. But that's certainly what people are talking about right now.
How would you describe how the market is reacting to these possible picks, cabinet picks? What's it saying to you?
Not really enough right now. I don't think the market is going to really react to it. The market has already reacted to President-elect Trump. It's at an all-time high. So I think the market has spoken. You know, so people are bullish.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we realize is that the market is self-correcting. And it's there are some interesting controls, you know, in place. And so it wants to be stabilized. These controls really have created conditions that require the market to be stabilized. It goes up and down, but there's a stabilization that appears to be in effect. So you'll have a few days of stress and trauma on the system, but then it sort of bounces back. Not certain that's sustainable.
And especially when you have regime change, there tends to be a little bit more volatility,
right?
Especially when it's extreme. So it could go one way or the other. You know, we certainly saw that under President Bill Clinton. The market certainly rallied there. And we saw it again under George Bush, and it went, you know, quite went the other way. But that was based on not only regime change, but part of that regime change was thought of the military and what was going to happen. And then after 9/11, it spoke for itself.
Right.
So, and President Obama has been criticized for not doing as much, but I think everyone knows that he didn't have the opportunity to do everything he wanted to do. The positive part of you know, he speaks of his legacy, which it won't be in his name, but there's a good chance that his transportation and infrastructure bill will probably pass under the name of President-elect Trump, the one that was turned down in Congress.
Really?
So let me
make sure I hear this. Say that again.
There was a jobs bill to be used for infrastructure a few years ago that the president wanted to roll out really for the economy and have it grow, but it was turned down. It wasn't even voted on. However, if you listen to President-elect Trump when he was running in his campaign, he talked about infrastructure, giving people jobs. Of course, he talked about the border as well, building that wall, but he talked about infrastructure. So they're going to have to pass this bill. Our roads are crumbling. Our bridges are crumbling. It's needed. And that will definitely spike the economy because you have so many people who are out of work who are not college educated.
Sure.
Many who are skilled tradesmen who can't find work.
That's right.
Or who are underemployed.
That's right.
So it's clear that this will definitely give a boost in our economy for years to come.
Well, I just wanted to hear you say all that again because, you know, it's really interesting that, you know, President Obama proposed the same sweeping, you know, strategy and he was criticized as being not shovel ready and all this foolishness. And so to hear you restate it twice.
Yeah, no problem.
It is just amazing to see how that takes off this time.
Yeah, I think we might need to get some of our listeners and get some questions and answers on maybe over the next coming weeks, and maybe we'll report them in the next coming shows about their feelings about items like that and about the University, I guess, of Goldman Sachs. And just to get a pulse of how people feel about how so many people, especially in the Treasury Department and leadership positions in the White House, are from Goldman Sachs. I would just be curious to know what people feel about that.
Do you feel like people's opinions? I mean, they hear the name Goldman Sachs and they're immediately, just from hearing the name, their opinions are formed there, Glenn. I mean, Goldman Sachs is one of those. I mean, I think you would agree with that, Nick, that public opinion is shaped by a lot of different things. But sometimes you can just hear a name and you automatically assume things, even if you don't know much about it.
That's a great point. Glenn, what do you think about that? I have my opinion of that.
Yeah, well, it was twofold. You have a certain camp who feel that, well, with Goldman Sachs, they got to know what they're doing.
That's right.
I mean, they make a lot of money, so they make money. They know what they're doing, so they'll be great. And then there's another camp, another side that says, well, that's, you know, they're greedy. They've caused a lot of these issues that we're having in our economy because of this greed, and they're dangerous to have legislate things that can affect the everyday person. So I really hear it from both sides, and that's, you know, and, it, yeah. and I would say for the people I've spoken with, probably 50-50.
Well, that's a good point you make. Well, Goldman Sachs is said to be one of the oldest trusted sort of white shoe Wall Street financial firms. And that brand has come to mean a great deal of stability. It's also been, as I mentioned earlier, intimately engaged with the presidential administrations. You got Paulson. I mean, you can go all the way back to these names. These guys are, you know, sort of tried and true, and in many cases, as this gentleman we're talking about, he supported both sides, Republicans, and they have varying political views. President Obama has utilized, you know, the talent in that organization deeply. So the name is a lot. I guess the name does trigger some things for folk.
I will be curious to know what some of the listeners are feeling about this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think people will be surprised to find out how many Goldman Sachs employees have been part of some of these administrations. I didn't realize that they had been so tied together all these years. That was interesting.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. It is. So, Glenn, you're in Atlanta. How you doing over there, guy?
Everything is going well. Just watching these markets, watching to see what things are going to do, and really trying to help people get prepared for the end of the year. Now we're in the month of December.
Yep, we sure are.
This time is just flying. I felt like I was just ringing in the new year a couple days ago.
Exactly. Hey, we didn't even talk about Thanksgiving. My goodness, you know.
I know it. It just went by so fast.
It went by so fast. It really did. It went by so fast. And here we are going into the Christmas season. Well, you know, next week we're having our Urban League annual meeting on December 8th at 5:30 at Bank of America Founders Hall.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
It's going to be very exciting. We're going to talk about the successes we've had, the impact that we're making, creating economic opportunity and financial stability for the least advantaged individuals in Charlotte, and providing job training and a whole range of academic support and enrichment. And so we're excited about this annual meeting. And we're going to honor a few people, too, who have added to the value of many people's lives. We're going to talk about our highway construction training program and why that's important. Broadband fiber optics, heating and ventilation, air conditioning systems training, and all of these careers that we are helping to create what we call career pathways for those who have, minimally a high school diploma, but yet have aspirations to better themselves and their families' lives. And we're providing in many ways a way out of no way, so individuals can really be productive and add to the economy of the Queen City. So that's what we're going to be dealing with on December 8th next week at Bank of America Founders Hall at our annual meeting.
Oh, great. Like, that's fantastic. I'm looking forward to attending and then to certainly hearing when we come back on our show. We'll have to talk a little bit more about that and how it went.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Sounds good.
Well, listen, buddy, this has always been good. Listen, travel safe. Get home safe.
Yeah. So thank you so much. And then just for our listeners moving forward, we're going to start talking about certain things that you need to prepare for before the end of the year.
Absolutely.
So we're going to start giving tips every week on things you need to do before the end of the year and how to begin to plan for your new year. So that will be coming up next.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Okay, buddy. I'll see you when I see you.
See ya.
Okay.
This has been The Worth Report with your host, Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright. To learn more about Worth Financial and to speak to one of their advisors, call 704-731-0121. That's 704-731-0121. Or log on to worthadvisors.com. That's worthadvisors.com.